Hello, this is Trevor. Stuart Clarkson's here too with the latest Radio Today news, including a reminder of Carolina Hearn's radio days. David Lloyd has some more radio moments, and I'll be continuing my tour of WNYC and finding out more about National Public Radio in the States. First, though, the fallout from a very public spat on TalkSport.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
So, it's the Alan Brazil Breakfast Show. The newsreader is Sandy Waugh, who's worked for Capital, LBC, Radio 4, and also teaches radio journalism, a very experienced broadcaster. With co-presenter Mickey Quinn in the background, Alan and Sandy are talking about Jeremy Corbyn and the backbench rebellion by Labour MPs. Have a listen.
And particularly feels very differently about
Jeremy
Corbyn.
And most Tories, even before the Brexit, most Tories were absolutely delighted he was leader of their Labour Party.
Yeah, because it's they're in the bubble in Westminster. The people that we're hearing from are in the bubble in Westminster. Go outside Westminster,
normal people,
and you do
Sandy,
get a very different view.
I've not met one apart from
on.
You who said that Corbyn's great.
I'm not saying Corbyn's great. I'm telling you what the Labour Party. My job is to be the balancing voice, as you know.
My job is to
balance the views.
You're Corbyn's niece, sorry, Alan.
I take offence at that because I'm a journalist on this station,
yeah.
And I have a job to be neutral. And one of my jobs here is to balance what's being said with respect by the likes of you at this moment in the programme, and make sure as a station we are reflecting all of the views. These are not my views. I do not put. And I am a professional journalist. I'm sorry, I'm getting quite genuinely serious.
Well, get genuinely serious. I don't care.
I'm angry that you are claiming to know my politics. I know you have no idea what my politics is. And it's important for my professional reputation.
All right, just go on with reading the news then, please.
I asked a question.
Sandy, go off.
I'm going. Thank you.
No, Sandy, no.
I'm going.
Right, 6:40.
Well, within a few minutes, order was restored and Sandy was back reading the news. But the exchange raised some important questions, I think, about the role of the experienced and impartial news reporter in a show which revels in the entertainment value of strong and often very partial opinion. Recent coverage of the referendum by all media has raised some important questions too, I think, about what due impartiality actually means. I've been discussing some of these issues with Sandy Waugh.
I think what this has brought up is the problem you have when you're wearing different hats, as it were, within the same environment, and also when you work as a freelancer in different cultures. I lecture, as you say, I freelance for other radio stations, I work in journalism training and media training, so I have to work for different, I hesitate to use the word standards, but I can't think of a better word there, but there are different expectations of the way you behave when controversial subjects are being discussed. And it's quite difficult to try and map over one experience onto another. If I was just on there at that point as a pundit, I could have put my own point of view across. But of course, because I appear as a journalist there, I feel it's very important, if you're a news person, to be as neutral as it's possible to be. And that's where the tension is, I think.
I think a lot of people in presentation roles wrestle with this, don't they? How can you be both impartial and honest?
It's extraordinarily difficult, and I think if you try and walk the line all the time, there is a danger, and I think I've been guilty of this in the past. You actually come over as quite sort of boring and uptight, and I'm certain that my ability to have been a frontline speech presenter has been affected by that, because I don't take a polarised position and go for it, because I have to come back and read the news. And you have to decide, I think, which part of the role is more important to you. It's always been very important to me to try to maintain that journalistic neutrality. On the same station, on TalkSport, earlier on in the month, I was anchoring some of the coverage of the referendum. And I need to know that people trust what I'm saying is coming from my best ability to be neutral and fair and balanced, rather than any preconceived political point of view. We can't be totally neutral, obviously that's not impossible, but we do our best to be.
I think that's probably the issue, really, isn't it? I've just spent a little bit of time in the United States, where they don't understand the words impartial or neutral. They understand the word authentic. They just think that if you're on, it's you that's on. Do you think, in a way, that kind of idea of on the one hand and on the other hand is being challenged possibly by the era of social networking?
I think there is a real issue around whether we are creating artificial problems for radio in particular in making us be this painfully neutral position when you get debates like at the time of elections and at the time of the referendum, and trying to expect us to be walking down this path of not committing to one side or another. I think sometimes it patronises the audience. And you then get the dilemma that if you appear in one environment tweeting your personal opinion, does that then mean you can't appear on air? And perhaps it is a time to have a look at the rules around due impartiality and fair treatment and saying, do you know what, listeners are adults. They actually can work out that if I say you should vote a certain way, that isn't necessarily going to make any more people do that. But it just maybe would free us up to be perhaps more creative in our radio.
I was reading an article that said that one of the insane things that happened during the referendum was actually a BBC bulletin, I think, but it said 17 Nobel Prize winners have said that a vote for Brexit will affect the Britain's ability to work properly in the scientific community. Pause. A member of the Leave campaign has said this is rubbish. And what this article was saying was that we were trying to balance things that were not actually balanceable.
Yeah, we had a problem when David Beckham came out and stated his position, that everyone was scrambling around trying to find a suitable sports person with which to balance that. And it does become ridiculous. And I think one of the effects of that, it's hard to measure, but I think there were an awful lot of stations that decided, you know what, we're just not going to cover this. It's safer to leave it to do as little amount as possible about this, because that way we know we'll be safe. And that's an even bigger disservice perhaps to our listeners.
You've spent a long time reading the news and producing news programmes and teaching radio journalism. What would you say to a young journalist coming up wanting a job in radio? Would you say, actually, you know, you should maybe forget some of these rules about impartiality and just go for it? Or would you say, actually, British civilisation depends a little bit on you adopting these old rules?
I think it depends where you're working. I think there is still a lot more expected within a BBC culture because of its history and because of obviously the rules of the way it operates. I would quite like to see perhaps people taking more advantage of the way podcasts can be used, the way other ways of expressing yourself can be used, to be maybe more polemic and more campaigning with radio. And I think there is an opportunity to demonstrate that you can make intelligent radio that takes sides and provide perhaps a bigger diversity of opinion that way. Because that's the issue, isn't it? If we say no rules, everyone can just say what they like, there is a possibility we only end up always having one side of the argument represented.
Well, final question. Can we, in your view, believe what we hear on a commercial radio news bulletin?
Yes, well, I have to say that, don't I? Because that's my bread and butter.
Yeah, you kind of do.
I think we do all strive to be as fair as we can.
Sandy Waugh, thank you very much for talking to the Radio Today programme. We appreciate it. And good luck.
Thank you.
News of the takeover of TalkSport and the rest of Wireless Group, and more from WNYC to come after this.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
With the latest Radio Today news, Stuart Clarkson.
Thank you, Trevor. And we start with the big story of the week, the £220 million sale of the Wireless Group to Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, owners of The Sun and The Times. TalkSport is the big prize, of course, along with Talk Radio, Virgin and a share of the second national DAB multiplex, plus the network of local radio stations in England, Wales and both Northern and Southern Ireland. News Corp says the Wireless Group audiences complement the audience of The Sun, and it says there's significant opportunity to increase engagement and monetization through cross-promotion and leveraging the two companies' respective talent and advertising sales forces. News Corp has cash assets of over £1 billion. Hopefully this means plenty of investment in the new radio division over the years to come. Who knows, maybe even more consolidation in our industry could come as well when Mr. Murdoch sees the value of radio. Watch this space. Busy week for Chris Evans. He's announced plans to concentrate mainly on his Radio 2 breakfast show after stepping down from his role on Top Gear. Lots of revelations in the tabloids about him too in recent days. One to watch in the days and weeks to come, I guess. Bauer has announced some changes to its shared programmes on the big city networks in the north of England and Scotland. Daryl Morris moves from Rock FM Breakfast to do the evening show in England, replacing Michael Blades. In Scotland, Callum Gallagher takes over from DJ Noxie on evenings. She's moving to the US. Other changes see Hallam FM's Simon Morrikin replace Alex James on Saturday Breakfast on the network, while Wes Butters joins for Sunday Breakfast in place of Connor Phillips. And Key 103's Mike Toolan teams up with Radio Air's Kelly Hinch for Saturday's 9 till 12 noon. It was previously Stu Elmore and Kelly in that slot. Staying with Bauer, Magic ABBA has been replaced on some DAB multiplexes across the country by Magic Soul Summer this week. The station's promising the best of Soul and Motown and includes shows from Magic presenters Angie Greaves and Martin Collins. Entries have opened for the new Audio and Radio Industry Awards. The Radio Academy run event takes place on the 19th of October at the Leeds Arena. There are awards in 16 categories, including Best Local and National Station, Speech Broadcaster, Music Presenter, National Music Breakfast Show, National Speech Breakfast Show, Local Breakfast Show, Audio Moment of the Year and Best News Coverage, plus a handful of others. The closing date for entries is 10 a.m. on the 15th of August. And tributes have been paid this week to the writer and broadcaster Carolina Hearn. She started out in radio working for Key 103 and KFM in Stockport, as well as with Martin Kellner on his Radio 2 and BBC North late night shows, where she developed her Mrs. Merton character.
And this joke's been sent in by David from High Lake. And is it David High Lake? David from High Lake.
Merseyside, yeah. I saw the letter.
Oh, did you? You've been peeking in my mailbag.
Well, no, it was a postcard and I could see on the back. And I didn't,
I didn't...
What if I'd known it was for you, I wouldn't have read it. But when I picked the postcard up, the backside was...
I bet it was. See, that's something lovely, I think, in summer for postmen. Because, of course, all in the winter, they can't see through the envelopes. And then come summer, it's a little treat for them. Mm. Because they can look at a lovely scenario on a postcard and read the back.
Right.
And it's something for them to do because, of course, it's quite a boring job being a postman. Because you're just putting letters into somebody's letterbox. It tends to get boring, so if they've got postcards in the summer, they enjoy it much more. So maybe if you do write a postcard back from your holidays, if you could maybe write a little thing for the postman on it, give him extra satisfaction.
The late great Caroline Ahern. And there's more radio news online every day at radiotoday.co.uk. That's the latest. I'm Stuart Clarkson.
Thank you, Stu. And before we move on, apologies if you're waiting for the interview with Darren Altman. It will appear in a subsequent edition. But back now to New York City and my tour around the studios of WNYC, the national public radio station, which provides local programming for audiences in New York and New Jersey, but has also made a name for itself in the online world with shows like Radio Lab, Freakonomics and Two Dope Queens. Dean Capello is Chief Content Officer for WNYC, and you join us talking about how his station fits into the national NPR network.
NPR provides the spine of morning and afternoon drive news content. So Morning Edition and All Things Considered, the two big shows, and then over that we interlace local content. So it's, you know, what the local listener hears in New York City is a mix of international, national, local. Part of it comes from NPR, part of it comes from us. And it shifts on any given day about what the mix is like. Then there's the content that we sometimes create here that goes back to NPR, which can then get distributed.
And is there any sort of competition between, I don't know, yourselves and WBZ and, you know, other stations that have got their own kind of trademarks?
You know, I think we're all kind of doing a similar job of trying to create local service. And then I think we do, you know, being in New York City, I mean, I'm not really competing with other public radio. I'm competing with commercial radio and commercial production companies and television and the New York Times. So it's a different competitive set. I mean, I think there's always bragging rights about who's number one in public radio across the country. But the reality is that, you know, in New York City, you don't have people trapped in cars, which you do have in San Francisco. So they, in a sense, the worse the traffic gets, the bigger their audience is. And that's really, that's terrific. So we're not really competing in that way. We do, I think, in a good-natured way, openly compete for talent, projects. It's become pretty typical now that somebody who has an interesting idea will come pitch it to us and pitch it to American Public Media or somebody else. There hasn't been any blood spilled over any of that. And, you know, I think there's still a kind of limited pool. And I think we're all trying to make sure that public radio stays interesting and vigorous so that we continue to be, we've been sort of a destination for smart, creative people. And, you know, we take that really seriously here. I mean, I think that one of the differentiators for WNYC is that it sees itself as a creative community that has this kind of output, and that if you're going to be that way, you need to facilitate the creative process. That, you know, 80% of the problem we have is about casting. It's about, you know, deciding who you want to work with and which projects. If you decide to work with Jad on Radiolab, you'd be foolish. I would be foolish to stand over him and say, like, and I think you should do this, and then you should do that, and no, don't do it. You know, he knows what he needs to do, and he's going to be smarter than I am about it. I just need to help facilitate that process.
And one thing that I think is different in your radio ecology is that you don't have an independent sector like we do in the UK. You know, the BBC is taking anything up to 20% of its programming now from the indie sector, and that will grow, and it's meant to grow up to 60% within a few years. Can you see that kind of thing happening here?
I mean, there is, you know, there's an association for independence in radio. There are various things like that. I think the difference is it's not prescribed in any way. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which has a certain amount of money from Congress, is meant to spend a certain amount of that on independent production. But, you know, increasingly, I mean, I think great institutions, like I think this one is, tend to think of, the way I think about it is, Radiolab is sort of an independent production within the framework of WNYC. I think now that the economy of podcasting is booming, you're seeing now the kind of money flowing toward independent production that otherwise couldn't have. But it's going to be different in that independent production in America has typically been independent producers who want to do their own projects, raising the money to produce them, producing them, and then finding some mechanism to distribute it. Now I think it's a lot more, oh, you are a smart independent producer, I am, you know, a magazine, please produce my podcast. It's more of that. There's clearly an appetite for more outsourcing. I think it's going to take 5 years before we know if the economy is real or if it's a bubble. But clearly, people who are in the independent production world are very, very excited at this point because they're just more opportunity. Yes.
Well, it's a good thing for Hillary Clinton that she isn't running against a policy called leave, or she might well not become the first woman president of the United States. Lucky for her, she's running against a deeply flawed human being, widely perceived as racist and unqualified, someone who framed the fallout from the Brexit vote in terms of how good it was for his Turnberry Scottish golf course.
Enormous shockwaves from Britain's historic vote to leave the European Union. Global markets are plummeting.
Every president is tested by world events. But Donald Trump thinks about how his golf resort can profit from them.
When the pound goes down, more people are coming to Turnberry.
Stocks tank around the world.
Brand new sprinkler system, the highest level.
He's talking about his new sprinkler system.
In a volatile world, the last thing we need is a volatile president.
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
So that was a quick response Clinton commercial produced this weekend, which took dead aim at Trump. hitting it into the sand trap on his Scottish golf course visit on Friday. Today in Cincinnati, by the way, Clinton makes her first campaign appearance with Elizabeth Warren. That'll change the media headline once they have that footage. And good morning, everyone. It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. And we begin today with some Monday morning politics.
One of our great local talk shows is in production right now. This is Brian Lehrer. Uh-huh. And we're standing behind the studio for the Brian Lehrer Show. And you can see a bank of producers who are taking calls coming in and lining them up for Brian. There's Megan Ryan in the middle, who's an extraordinary executive producer and who's directing right now.
And how's phone-in radio doing? Is it still amazing. Really popular?
I think it's amazing. Well, I think it's, you know, we differentiate it for us in that a lot of call-in talk programming is conservative radio in America. It's more like Rush Limbaugh than it is anything else. Here, this really is, I mean, the one thing that Brian has done over the last nearly 30 years is kind of created a daily gathering place for all New Yorkers. And the wide variety of New York City doesn't always show up in what you see, like a research report. But if Brian, if something happened today in a particular community in New York City, he would call out to, if you are so-and-so and you arrived in America on this date and you're from this country, we'd like you to call right now. And I constantly ask him this question. I've never seen them be stumped. You know, so the idea that this is not a big, diverse community of people who are listening is kind of always blown apart by the fact that he can tap almost any community.
I like that thought of the call out. Call us if you can offer us an opinion on this, rather than the idea that if somebody rings, they automatically get on.
I think great call-in programs are almost always, you know, the callers are an element of this bigger discussion. Because if you imagine, most people will never call in. So really what you're trying to do is serve somebody at home. And you're trying to think, okay, so I'm Brian. There's what I'm going to say. There's maybe what my guest will say. And then I think one thing that just is a genius of Brian Lehrer is that he really understands how to take this caller and reflect it in the next one and the next one. And he sometimes will ask this person to talk to that person.
I've heard him do that. We have a guy called Nicky Campbell on Five Live who does this very well. It's kind of talk to each other for a minute and I'll pull back.
And I think one thing that's changed for us over time is that as opposed to being producing a show that we push back out to the audience, we've really started to see it as a kind of ongoing conversation. And that in the spirit of the best dinner party, Brian initiates the conversation. When the audience starts to talk to the audience, we feel like we've really accomplished something because the goal is not just for us to be the last word on something. The goal is to kind of inspire you to go share something with your staff or with your workmates, with your family, however it is. And let me take you into the control room.
Broadcast Bionics, solutions for radio, sponsors the Radio Today program.
And where are you in the world of digital radio?
It hasn't caught on. I mean, I actually have a DAB radio that I bought in London and enjoy when I go there, which comparatively is so much easier to use than what it's called HD radio in America, which has never really caught on. And it's partly because you have these radio manufacturers fighting with each other about the best way to install it. So it hasn't really gone anywhere. And I think it's probably being bypassed by the fact that we can just stream directly through websites or iTunes or apps as we're doing. And so I think it's just, nobody's going to bother making a big investment in an HD radio if you could just get the same.
I fear that there is a school of thought in the UK that may be the same thing, that actually people are going to miss out that step of DAB, a lot of customers. They're just going to go straight from FM to broadband streaming off their smartphone.
Right, and so those, I mean, so I, as just an example, I can sit in my kitchen and talk to my Amazon Echo and ask it to pull up Radio 4. I don't really care whether it's on any kind of a device, or I want to hear it at that moment. So I think all the pieces are going to converge. It's really going to be about what streams of content you create and then how people hear them. And just
platform neutral.
Trying to get it to as many people as possible with as little friction. you know, as we return to the office, it's just a hugely kind of collaborative environment, you know, generated entirely by the staff and people who work here. So the building is a kind of living manifestation of the way we want to be with each other. And I think that's what's kind of most exciting about it. And now we're trying to figure out how we're connected to other people in other parts of the country. I'm assuming I will not be surprised if we have an office in London someday. So, you know, I think it's the nature of like work in, you know, this century that is only going to develop, and the technology facilitates people being connected to each other wherever they are.
Well, Dean Capello, we've just made a podcast. What do you think of it? You're the expert on podcasts. Do you think this one's
any good?
Obviously, you haven't heard the edited version, which will be sumptuous.
Wait a minute, did I sign a release?
You don't have to. I'm running away now. Thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it.
That was Dean Capello from WNYC. And last week's show, which includes part one of our conversation, is still available wherever you catch your podcasts. And I do recommend you to try More Perfect, the latest on-demand show from the Radiolab team. Brilliant stuff. As is David Lloyd's Radio Moments, of course. Here he is. Radio
Moments. We start this week in 1999 and the last regular afternoon show on Radio 2 for Ed Stewart, for a time at least.
Our unlucky winner today and a little bag of Radio 2 goodies going to Ted Coltman of Churton Grove, King's Heath in Birmingham. He wanted a record to celebrate his birthday today, and for his friend Ella Manning, whose birthday was on November the 3rd, but no luck with the request, but instead one or two little goodies on their way to you. Ted Coltman of Churton Grove, King's Heath in Birmingham. Well, our last request now, and our daughter Caroline.
Ed Stewart, who left Radio 2 Afternoons this week 17 years ago. Ed went on to commercial radio before returning to Radio 2. Of course, he died earlier this year. Ed was replaced at Radio 2 by Steve Wright in the afternoon.
Hello. This is Steve here on Radio 2. How you doing there? All right. So nice to be back with you. I just can't tell you. Partly cloudy, partly sunny, scattered thunder showers. The pollen count is low.
Steve Wright, who debuted on Radio 2 Afternoons this week 16 years ago. The same show had been aired on Radio 1 for 13 years. Now, Radio 4's never been a jingles station, has it? And it has fewer sig tunes of late, too, I've noticed. But this week, 43 years ago, it got a new station theme to start the day. It was called the skipping theme. I have this picture in my mind of Robert Robinson skipping to that. It's a wonderful sight. The skipping theme, which arrived at Radio 4 this week in 1973, it lasted 5 years. Written actually by Fritz Spiegel, who went on to arrange the familiar UK theme. Now, if you think that commercial radio calling all its stations by the same name is a new thing, then think again. Here's a story from 1964. The first UK pirates were Radio Caroline and Radio Atlanta. And 52 years ago, the companies behind those stations, Project Atlanta and Planet Productions, announced they were to merge, with Crawford and Ronan O'Reilly becoming joint MDs.
There he is, everybody. Mr. Jimmy Dean with Big John, Big Bad John. Say, you ought to see the North Sea today. Where the Radio Atlanta is anchored, it's a beautiful thing. It's just as calm as a grass lawn or carpet. It's so calm, it looks like that you could lay your blanket down and lay down on it. It's just that beautiful. It's a beautiful sea today.
The wonderful Radio Atlanta from the MV Mi Amigo, moored 3.5 miles off Frinton. The station was on air for just a couple of months. It became Caroline South. Now, this week was a big one for radio in York. This week in 83, it got its BBC station at last.
I have the greatest pleasure in the honour, and it is an honour, and knowing that it will fulfil a vital function in this county.
Day one was a mixture of the most amazing excitement and anticipation, and also the jitters and of nerves, there's no doubt about that, because one thing that we knew by then about local radio is that you only get one shot at it.
Radio York on air this week in 83, and that same week, but in 1992, commercial radio arrived.
The Minster FM has come to York today!
This is Yorktown crier John Redpath wishing Minster FM all the best. May they play some great records.
Thank you, John, and happy birthday to radio in York of all kinds. The first disc jockey in the United Kingdom made his debut this week in 1927. His name, Christopher Stone.
This is the national programme. Christopher Stone will present a regular programme of gramophone records. Now here is Christopher Stone with the first programme.
Good afternoon. I'd like to be able to bring this bunch of records to you. Now I'm going to put on another of Sanderson's ballads, As I Sit Here, sung by the Negro pianist and singer Leslie Hutchinson. Now you may hate it, but I hope you won't.
He was pretty good, wasn't he? And no name-check a cappella either. Christopher Stone, who presented his first ever record programme on the BBC this week in 1927. He later left for Radio Luxembourg and then Radio Lyon before returning to Auntie, where he created a bit of a rumpus when he wished the King of Italy a very happy birthday. We were at war at the time. His boss was sacked, and there was a call for tighter control over programmes, and I suspect the cry, Who's Complying Christopher Stone, rang out around Broadcasting House. This week in 1943 saw the launch of a radio network for the GIs scattered across Europe. It was relayed over a host of transmitters, and the early broadcast came from London.
Serving freedom in Europe, this is Democracy on a Dial, a voice among the mute, a radio station in olive drab.
Our troops at AFN, they all consider themselves to be broadcasters first and soldiers second. And the command considered them to be soldiers first and broadcasters second.
The voice of Corporal Sil Binkin, who became the first American Forces broadcaster. The station was enjoyed over here too, and in later years, Van Morrison tried to tune in from Northern Ireland.
For Luxembourg, Luxembourg, Athlone, Budapest, AFN.
It's 41 years this week since commercial radio arrived in Nottingham.
Billy Paul, July, July, July. I'll go along with that. Good morning, sleepyheads. How are you this morning? Weather today, continuing mainly dry, sunny periods, becoming warm this afternoon, temperatures nearing 24.
The IBA limits commercial radio to 9 minutes advertising in any given hour. There are a few hours, of course, where all 9 minutes is sold, particularly at this time of year. This is a very quiet time of year for the advertising business.
9 minutes an hour. Good grief. The programme controller there was Bob Snyder. The first presenter was John Peters. So, with Tony Blackburn leaving BBC London for Capital Gold 28 years ago...
Radio London, the class of music radio, your darling power, 94.9 FM stereo.
Kid Jensen celebrating his 66th birthday.
Drive time, till 7, the kid at the controls.
Woman's Hour, moving from Radio 2 to Radio 4 43 years ago.
I always visualised the poor, wretched housewife, her morale probably at the lowest, round about 2 o'clock in the afternoon when she had washing up and lunch to do.
And the BBC Trust rejecting plans to close Six Music 6 years ago.
And of course we want to say a huge thank you to all of you for all of the incredible support you've given us.
Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments. Thank you David Lloyd, Sandy Ward, Dean Capello, Stuart Clarkson and researcher Hayley Hayes. This has been a TDC production. I'm Trevor Dan. Do join me next time.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.